Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning, hello. Welcome. Thanks for joining me. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast the unceded ancestral territory of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking people who have been gathering here, living here, getting together to share stories and music and information and culture since time immemorial. And as we approach the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation, I am even more aware and grateful than usual of the privilege, the massive privilege that I have to be here in this place on these stolen, unceded lands to continue that tradition in my own way. Today on the program, your usual mix of things. We've got a couple pieces from our local journalist, Danny Nesvenerani. We've got the first in a series of interviews that I and my friend Dan have been putting together about sports analytics and sports statistics and sports science that might turn into a show of some sort. We'll see. But I spoke with SFU's very own Dr. Tim Swartz. We spoke with him about hockey analytics, pickleball analytics, all sorts of cool stuff. So we'll get to that. We'll play some music, and that's where we're going to start. Last week, I played you the first A-side of a double A-side of new music released by Vancouver's very own The Golden Age of Wrestling. We played Stanley Park Ravers last week, and today we're going to kick things off with the other A-side. It's not a B-side, it's a double A-side. This one is called Baptized in Lava. We'll be right back.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On September 12th, the First People's Gathering House on Simon Fraser University's Burnaby campus opened its doors to the public. First announced in September of 2020, the First People's Gathering House has been discussed as a ceremonial longhouse that will serve to celebrate Indigenous knowledge and culture at SFU. The Gathering House represents the four host nations whose unceded traditional lands SFU Burnaby was built on: the Musqueam Nation, the Tsleil-Waututh Nation, the Squamish Nation, and the Coquitlam Nation. Before the opening ceremony, CJSF was able to get an inside look of the First People's Gathering House, where we spent time in the building's Great Hall. The space has very intentionally been wrapped inside and out with cedar, a traditional longhouse building material. While looking through the space, we were able to speak with Alden Yellowhorn, an SFU professor with the Department of Indigenous Studies and a member of the building committee for the First People's Gathering House. While the plans for this building are only several years old, according to Yellowhorn, its creation has been talked about since his time at SFU in the 1990s.
Prior to this, the Indigenous community didn't really have much of a footprint here on campus. And this building really stands in stark contrast to that brutalist style of architecture that, you know, very part of Arthur Erickson's design. And this creates kind of an architectural dialogue between the very organic ideas of this space and concrete and edged corners of the rest of the university.
Yellowhorn then went on to describe more of the architectural intentions of the First People's Gathering House.
The way we designed the place with the architect, you know, taking the traditional or the vernacular architecture of local First Nations and using that as the template for creating the physical structure so that even somebody walking past here, it takes like 2 minutes to walk past here, but they'll learn something about First Nations people in that time. So we designed it. Everything is designed to highlight the local culture from the interior design, but also the landscape. We used native plants to do the landscaping and kind of really emphasizing the local area and what it means, like the place Lukluk-Waitin, the place of our Arbutus trees. And so we're looking, even if you look at the outside of the building, it's designed to look like Arbutus trees, the bark of Arbutus trees, you know, and as the building ages, it'll take on that resemblance more.
Lastly, we asked Alden Yellowhorn what the community response and interest have been so far for the First People's Gathering House.
Oh, well, we've already had a lot of interest in the space, you know, for people wanting to hold special classes, to invite guest speakers who are coming to SFU, but also to hold special gatherings for their departments. So we're just waiting until after the opening is done, and then we'll start taking bookings. And by then, we'll have a fee structure on how much we'll be charging for the use of the space and whatnot.
In the Great Hall of the First People's Gathering House, there are four house posts that have been carved by a member of each of the four host nations. Before the opening, we had the opportunity to speak with Lyle Sparrow, a carver from the Musqueam Nation, who shared with us the personal meaning of the house post that he carved and what it depicts.
When the Kamloops thing came out, given our past history on the boarding schools, I just wanted to honor the ones that were left and never found. So that's the meaning behind the pole, is Mother Earth on the bottom, given passing the young ones up to grandfather and freeing them. I don't know, there's just a lot of bad history about it. And my parents went through it, and it wasn't until later years that I found out, you know, what had happened to them, and, you know, sort of had me in a mode of thinking of, you know, like the other people across this country that went through the, you know, similar things, and, you know, just to honor them and, you know, give some healing to the ones that are still here and free the ones that are not. And, you know, thanks to Kamloops, it's worldwide. You know, it's not something that you can dismiss anymore and say, no, it never happened. It happened. And, you know, like I said, I'm kind of proud of my parents, too, where they never really brought it up about what really happened to them in the boarding schools. But when I learned what did happen, it sort of hurts the heart.
Lyle Sparrow then went on to explain his personal experience carving this house post and some of what it brought up for him.
I mean, there were some days where it was hard, you know, because my mind is, you know, with the pole, what I was doing. And then, but at the same time, thinking back on, you know, different things that came to light as I was growing up. You know, so like I said, there were hard days and there were good days.
Later in the day, the public opening ceremony began, which included opening words from local Indigenous elders from the Squamish and Musqueam Nations, as well as various song and dance performances, including from the Red Tail Spirit Singers. Now that the First Peoples Gathering House at the SFU Burnaby campus has opened, it will be available to pre-invited guests from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., Monday to Friday. This has been Danny Nezvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
For many, a career in music is a dream come true. However, the reality is that many people in the Canadian music industry do not have access to medical benefits and financial aid. This is especially true for our music industry veterans, and it's why the Unison Fund created the Slate Family Foundation Legacy Program. To learn more on how you can support legacy artists and musicians who are coping with unexpected or chronic illness, visit unisonfund.ca.
Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. Thanks to Danny for that report on the First Peoples Gathering House here up at SFU. And we're going to hear another piece from Danny in a little bit. But first, we're going to hear a little bit more local music. This is from the band Primp, who have put out their final record and will no longer be a band, which is a bummer, but sometimes that's what happens with bands. You just hit a point where it doesn't make sense to continue. Anyway, they put out a self-titled record called Primp on September 6th, and this is the final track off the final record from local band Primp. Oh, it's called Howl.
Waiting through a dream. Don't feed me, I'm listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University on Burnaby Mountain.
This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. The British Columbia Federation of Students is sounding the alarm on increasing program cuts, reduced services, and longer waitlists going into the new school year. The BC Federation of Students, or BCFS, is a coalition of 14 post-secondary student unions throughout the province that advocate for more accessible and affordable post-secondary education. With the new school year now underway, the organization has started a campaign called Cuts Suck, which calls on the provincial government of BC to restore the public funding of post-secondary institutions to at least 75% of operating budgets, which would return this percentage to what it was before the year 2000. To learn more about this campaign, as well as the specifics of the program cuts and reduced services that the BCFS is advocating against, we sat down for a talk with Debbie Herrera-Lira, the organization's lead chairperson. During our conversation, we discussed how students can get involved with the campaign, the detrimental effects of post-secondary budget cuts, and why provincial funding for post-secondary institutions has decreased throughout the years.
20 years ago, the provincial government used to provide funding to the post-secondary sector. They used to provide 70% of funding. Now, 20 years after, it's less than 30%. Years ago, they discovered that by inviting more international students into the country, they can actually rely on international student fees to pay for our education, while at the same time divesting in post-secondary education. So when the provincial government provided less money over the past 20 years, they were charging international students double, sometimes even triple, to study in Canada, and relied on their tuition fees to pay for everyone's education, and for, you know, all institutions across British Columbia did it. We have always told the provincial government that the funding model is unstable, that this is relying on international student fees was unstable. And we always knew, we were always seeing that the provincial government was divesting in our education. So we always knew that this was an issue and this was happening. We've been calling on the provincial government to do something for years. But now in 2025, when the IRCC introduced new restrictions for international students and international student visas were being restricted, and there's less international students now, then their funding is, of course, like, is no longer being used for institutions, or not as much as it used to, which means that we're really seeing the effects of lack of funding from the provincial government, because that is still there and that is still the root cause. So that is the reason why everywhere and different institutions and colleges and universities are experiencing similar things, and which is why it's harder for students to continue their education.
Debbie Herrera-Lira then went on to describe some of the issues that students are facing in post-secondary institutions as a result of this lack of funding.
But what we're seeing across the province is that because of a lack of provincial funding from the provincial government to the post-secondary sector, institutions across British Columbia are having to make program cuts, course cuts, even lay off faculty, and that is deeply impacting students' education and campus life. We are hearing from students that, from some students that have had to transfer to different institutions because their program was cut. I know a student that I just recently met had to transfer three different times to three different institutions. Courses are being cut, which means that they are delaying their graduation by semesters and sometimes even years. And because of budget cuts on campus or layoff of staff and faculty, services, important services like the library or even counseling services on campus are less accessible than they used to be. So that's, again, impacting students on campus.
Lastly, We asked Debbie Herrera-Lira how students can get involved with this campaign, as well as just advocating in general for increased budgeting for their post-secondary institutions. This is what they had to say.
We have a couple of actions that students can take across the province to help us in advocating for more funding. We have 14 member locals, and at those 14 institutions, we are currently gathering postcards from students, taking their photo, and we're going to actually mail them out next week. We're trying to get as many as possible, hoping to mail hundreds, if not hopefully thousands, that the Minister of Education will have to open each one, record each one, and stare in the faces of students that are currently experiencing those cuts. So to any students out there, if they see that on campus and they see their student union talking about that, we'd love to get your postcard and make sure to send it so that, you know, we're stronger together, where we have the more numbers possible, the more chances we have of being heard. But also, if anyone goes to our website, cutsuck.ca, we have an email tool list with a pre-written email that students can just enter their information, or anyone can enter their information, and that email will be mailed to your MLA, the Premier, and the Minister of Education. That way, again, making sure that our voices are heard and getting as many numbers as possible of people to contribute to our campaign.
Once again, that was our conversation with Debbie Herrera-Lira, the chairperson for the BC Federation of Students, talking about their recent advocacy campaign, Cut Suck, which is calling on the provincial government of BC to restore the public funding of post-secondary institutions to at least 75% of operating budgets. This has been Danny Nezvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
If you're a regular listener of this show or other shows on CJSF, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us about what you like and why you like it, as well as ways we can improve our programming. To leave comments, please email cjsfprog@sfu.ca or call 778-782-4423. This information can also be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer.